Welcome to the Journey of Wholeness podcast. We are a group of passionate individuals who are coaches and mentors here to help inspire, guide, and support you on your journey of wholeness. We know that the journey of wholeness is a lifelong pursuit, and we are thrilled to join you in your journey. We are passionate about sharing our life lessons, wisdom, and knowledge to help you to transform your life. We focus on teaching principles of truth, supporting you in applying those truths, and helping you to live a life full of joy.
Awesome. Okay. Beautiful. Welcome everybody to our tea party tonight. I'd love to just kind of get settled. We may have a couple more people join us in a few minutes, but love to hear about what tea you guys are drinking tonight, as well as maybe just a really brief, like, what's your favorite Christmas tradition in your family? It could be from when you were growing up or as an adult in your adult family, whatever that looks like, right? So just the first thing that comes to your mind, like, what's your favorite thing that you guys do for Christmas? So I'll start. My tea, I should show you guys my fun. It's not my mug that I'm super happy with. My mug is happy, but I have this manatee that literally, I put my loose leaf tea inside of it and it just steeps. Cool. I'm not going to tilt it because it's very full and it's going to tip all over my computer, but this is my manatee and it's makes me really happy. I just ordered a hippo one because they have ones that are hippos.
Wow, that's cool.
Anyway, and I have a blend that's stress relief, and then I have another blend that's like helping to support your immune system. I don't remember what's in it because a friend made the immune support one for me a long time ago, and I didn't label anything, you guys. Like, when you don't label things, you forget. So that's what's in my cup, but it's very red and pretty. And one of my favorite Christmas traditions with my family is, it sounds funny and silly, but it's making gingerbread houses. My mom would always make the gingerbread from scratch and buy tons of candy. And it was just such a process of like constructing these houses, and the house would smell like gingerbread for days. And then we would, I don't know, it was just the process that our family goes through. We would get cardboard boxes and cut them out, line them with foil, and then build up our houses. And it was always this fun process of like, what story are you creating with your gingerbread house? So that's one of my favorite holiday traditions. Who would like to go next? What tea are you drinking, and what's your favorite holiday tradition?
I'll go. I've got lemon ginger tea. And this one happened to have probiotics added in it also, which I thought was a fun addition. and I'm just going to be a little odd and different. You said favorite tradition. I just want to tie in something that I learned this week about a tradition that's really common. And that is that gift giving. So Christmas in a lot of ways is tied back to pagan roots, right? And so one of the sources is through Roman influence. They would give a gift, just one gift, to one person. And the purpose of that was to invite good luck and fertility in the harvest in the next year, like a productive harvest. So I thought it was interesting to see this one gift, one person, with the purpose of luck and a good harvest, switch to this massive gift giving holiday.
I'll go next. My tea is one I just bought today. It's called Bedtime Soothing Caramel, and it's actually really tasty. I put a little splash of almond milk in it. I'm enjoying it. So a tradition, I think the first one that popped in my mind with my kids every year, I have thought of something that they've learned or done that year, and then bought an ornament for them or made something just to represent like them for that year. So it's been a fun tradition. Like, my kids love pulling them out and like, oh yeah, that one is mine. And, you know, like, just, I think it's just a good reminder of the growth that's been happening in their own lives. So it's been fun.
I'll go really quick. Okay. So I am drinking my Honeybush Mandarin and Orange tea again in my cute Christmas cup. Says 'tis the season. Thank you very much. My husband just brought me dinner. my favorite Christmas tradition actually is every year, I have a lot, but I think probably my favorite is we go Christmas caroling as a family. We usually go on December 23rd. Every year we go, and it's just one of my favorite things to do. So,
thank you.
welcome, Krista. Before we're just introducing everybody and sharing what tea we're drinking, if you're drinking any kind of a tea, as well as we're sharing just a fun Christmas tradition that either you did as a child or as an adult, whatever is going. So Dolores, if you want to share your next, and then we'll give Krista a second to, sure. to share your thoughts.
Well, I'm drinking Earl Grey again. I'll see what I can do next time. I should have my reindeer antlers. It is Christmas. I'm a candle person, and this isn't something that is from my family or anything. It's just something I really enjoy. And especially at Christmas time, I usually have quite a few candles going, but one thing, I have this lantern. I don't have any down here, but it's not very big. And it's just the very size of a tea light. And it's enclosed. And I was inspired one Christmas, several Christmases ago, to put the tea light in and light it and put it in the window in the front porch. Because I thought, you know, in case there are people that are wandering and need a place to, you know, just a warm feeling, so that's what I did. And that's it just felt like the right thing to do at the time. And I do that every year now. It's just a little thing, but it makes me happy.
Isn't that the beauty of Christmas? That's the beauty of Christmas. Krista, no pressure, but if you'd like to share, you're welcome to share.
Oh, it's good. That's just the sweetest, though, putting a candle in the window for just making sure your light shines and makes people feel better. I think that's a lot of what tea does for me. It's warm. I like to put a little bit of either have a tea that's sweet or put a little maple syrup in mine. I am not currently drinking tea, but often it is chai with a little milk and maple syrup, which is just yummy. And then I think like Christmas proper was never my favorite. It isn't really a holiday that I've done consistently with family, but the day after Thanksgiving at my aunt's house, we would always decorate gingerbread houses. And she would make the, like so many of them, probably, I don't know, 8 of them. And it was always a thing. We'd go shopping for the candy we wanted. And then you'd share. And it was always a fun camaraderie. And then it's the gift that keeps on giving, because you eat your Christmas gingerbread house for like, you know, a month later. So yeah. So thank you. And it's lovely to be here. Nice seeing you all.
Yay. We're so glad you're here. that's so fun, your memory of gingerbread. I shared the same thought at the beginning. Gingerbread houses are one of my favorite things to do during Christmas.
Yay. Yeah.
Very fun. Okay, so I want to just kind of give you a rundown of what we're doing tonight, and then we'll get busy with our fun activities for the night. So tonight we are focusing on Christmas stories. Actually, before I get into the flow of tonight, Krista, I loved your thoughts, right? Like, tea is so nourishing and warming, and That is part of the reason why we decided to actually create these tea parties. Because for us, and what we are choosing to do collectively as a group, is we are desiring to create spaces where it's very nourishing and warming to our souls. And so Amy and I came up with a thing a couple of years ago where we did an in-person tea party. And for that purpose, or it just felt really nourishing to our hearts to gather some people together and drink tea. So we did, and it was really awesome. And every time that we do these tea parties, that is how I feel. I feel really nourished and uplifted. And it just happens to be that we get to drink tea while we're at it. And it's just, it's been really joyful to gather with people. So thank you. Whether you choose to drink tea or not, like, who cares? It's about the nourishment. So, and there's a lot of really beautiful benefits to tea, and whether it's the same type of tea, Dolores, you're not alone. Literally, as I was getting my tea ready for tonight, I was like, oh man, this is like my fourth cup of tea today, but I usually end up drinking the same type of tea like all day. I just happened to choose a different one for tonight. So yep, we always go to our favorites, and the one Heather's drinking, ooh, that one is tasty. That one is tasty. So grateful you guys are here. Thank you for sharing your fun traditions and your what you're choosing to drink tonight. And what we're going to do tonight is a little bit different than what we've done in the past. In the past, we've had people like present and share some really powerful information with us. And we're not doing it quite that style this time around. We really just wanted to keep it simple and really lighthearted, and yet like being able to touch our hearts during this Christmas season. And we just want to share some Christmas stories with you guys tonight. And we hadn't really discussed this as a group, but I think it would be really lovely if one person shares a story. That I should clarify, Heather and Amy and I are sharing stories that we have prepared. And so one of us will share a story. And then I actually think it would be lovely if we just gave ourselves just a couple of minutes and just shared some insights from that story that we heard while we were listening to the story. And so I'm going to invite you guys, for each one of these three stories tonight, as you listen, that I'm going to invite you guys to think about like the one main lesson that you're pulling from the story. And then we can just share that, just maybe like one gold nugget that you're learning from each Christmas story. And I think that would be really lovely. Cause we learn a lot from listening to other people's downloads and how they interpret information and what they're learning about that story. So if that's okay, then I think that would be a really beautiful flow and keep it really simple. Okay, so the flow for tonight is Amy's going to start us off with her Christmas story, and then we'll take a couple minutes and talk about our golden nuggets that we've learned from Amy's story. And then we'll pass the time over to Heather, and she'll share her Christmas story. We'll do the same thing with golden nuggets. And then I will share Christmas story at the end, and then share some other details with you. We'll do our golden nugget thing, and then I'll share some other details with you at the end. So I will pass the time over to Amy.
Great. So the story I have for you is titled The Three Purses, A Legend. It's by William S. Walsh. And I can put the link for where I found this in the chat here once I'm done reading. It's one of my favorite places to go. Finding things is in archive.org. It's a book that's past its need for a copyright restriction. And so it's older and completely accessible online, downloadable as like a PDF or as an EPUB book. So to go on with the story, The Three Purses. When St. Nicholas was Bishop of Myra, there were among his people three beautiful maidens, daughters of a nobleman. Their father was so poor that he could not afford to give them dowries. And as in that land, no maid might marry without a dowry, so these three maidens could not wed the youths who loved them. At last, the father became so very poor that he no longer had money with which to buy food or clothes for his daughters, and he was overcome by shame and sorrow. As for the daughters, they wept continually, for they were both cold and hungry. One day, St. Nicholas heard of the sad state of this noble family. So at night, when the maidens were asleep and the father was watching, sorrowful and lonely, the good saint took a handful of gold and, tying it in a purse, set off for the nobleman's house. Creeping to the open window, he threw the purse into the chamber so that it fell on the bed of the sleeping maidens. The father picked up the purse, and when he opened it and saw the gold, he rejoiced greatly and awakened his daughters. He gave most of the gold to his eldest child for a dowry, and thus she was enabled to wed the young man whom she loved. A few days later, St. Nicholas filled another purse with gold and, as before, went by night to the nobleman's house and tossed the purse through the open window. Thus, the second daughter was enabled to marry the young man whom she loved. Now the nobleman felt very grateful to the unknown one who threw purses of gold into his room, and he longed to know who his benefactor was and to thank him. So the next night he watched beneath the open window, and when all was dark, lo, good St. Nicholas came for the third time, carrying a silken purse filled with gold. And as he was about to throw it on the youngest maiden's bed, the nobleman caught him by his robe, crying, "Oh, good St. Nicholas, why do you hide yourself thus?" And he kissed the saint's hands and feet. But St. Nicholas, overcome with confusion at having his good deed discovered, begged the nobleman to tell no man what had happened. Thus the nobleman's third daughter was enabled to marry the young man whom she loved, and she and her father and her two sisters lived happily for the remainder of their days.
Okay, so whoever wants to share a gold nugget, you're not required to share, but whatever gold nugget you guys heard in her story, go ahead and unmute yourself and share.
Okay, so really quick, this is like, this was my perspective. I'm like, oh, I would, if somebody were doing something like that for me, I would, and they were obviously trying to keep it a secret, I would want to, even if I discovered who it was, I wouldn't tell them I knew it was them. Like, that was my takeaway, because he was like, whoa, I don't want you knowing that it's me. And anyhow, so that... I that might sound kind of silly, but I'm like, he wanted it to be a secret. Like, that would be how I would honor the person. So anyways, that was my little takeaway.
So I want to share just an interesting thing about my process of coming to the story. It was somewhat intuitive, and yet I'm still like, you know, there's probably tons of other stories that might have a more rich and obvious meaning. So I am curious to see, you know, if it touched anyone in their hearts. And if not, it's fine. I followed my intuition. So there's that.
I'll share my little golden nugget. I think for me, what stood out is this family was struggling. The father wanted what was best for his daughters, as most parents do, right? But wasn't able to provide for them. And yet with patience, someone was able to come along and give what he couldn't give. And they were blessed in just the ways that they were needed, probably at the exact right time that they needed. So I think oftentimes in life, when we're going through struggles and we're like, I just want to get through this and out of this, right? I think if we can be patient, then the perfect gift will come at the perfect time. So it's that enjoying ourselves in that journey and being patient, waiting, and trusting that the gift will come when it's the right time.
I think the thought that I had, Jennings, I really loved what you just shared. That was really powerful. I think the thing that just honestly simply stood out to me the most in the story was just the principle of generosity. That somebody that didn't have to give wanted to. And I don't know why that stood out to me. And again, kind of like with you, Amy, I was listening, but that was the only part that like really caught my intuitive attention. And I don't know, maybe it's because, I don't know why, but I just thought that was a really neat part of the story, right? Because kind of bouncing along with what Janice just shared, right? It's like, we're not required to give to other people, and yet oftentimes that's when the most joy in our lives comes, when we give, when it's in alignment with ourselves and with the other people. Because oftentimes our head gets in the way of like, oh, I'm supposed to do all these things, I'm supposed to give in all these ways, but really the most joy comes from when I'm giving from my heart. And I'm assuming that's the right, I mean, that's the same with everybody.
One of the takeaways kind of builds on what you all are talking about, but I think also that we don't always know why somebody wants to give something. And sometimes when we presume it's our own, like that they're doing it for the same reasons we might do it, we can question it more rather than just being appreciative. So I think it's good to trust, to remember to trust sometimes.
Love that. Cool. Maybe you give, I don't know, 10 more seconds to just kind of sit with that, and then we'll pass the time over to Heather.
I think if we can learn to surrender to what is and trust, it's amazing what will come our way. Yeah.
I love that there's been like this overarching theme of trust, you guys. The lessons I'm learning in my personal life right now, yeah, that's like at the top. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for that story, Amy. And Dolores, I love your reindeer antlers. They're fantastic. They make me happy.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I got them at the dollar store.
Nice.
I actually got them for the dog. She's this husky. And then I thought, oh, well, she won't wear them anyway, so I do.
I love it. Okay, so the story that I am reading tonight, we have a binder that is currently missing, and I want to cry about it, but my mom loaned me her book of stories that has most of the same ones that ours has. We read a story every day from December 21st until December 24th. And this is one of my favorite stories in that binder that is currently missing, but I was able to find it online and I'm so happy. It's just called A Christmas Story. And the author is unknown. Diana Williams is the one who contributed it to the website where I found it. Anyways, okay. This is Christmas 1881. Let's see if I can, there we go. Pa never had much compassion for the lazy or those who squandered their means and then never had enough for the necessities. But for those who were genuinely in need, his heart was as big as all outdoors. It was from him that I learned the greatest joy in life comes from giving, not from receiving. It was Christmas Eve, 1881. I was 15 years old and feeling like the world had caved in on me because there just hadn't been enough money to buy me the rifle I'd wanted so bad that year for Christmas. We did the chores early that night for some reason. I just figured Pa wanted a little extra time so we could read in the Bible. So after supper was over, I took my boots off and stretched out in front of the fireplace and waited for Pa to get down the old Bible. I was still feeling sorry for myself and, to be honest, I wasn't in much of a mood to read scriptures. But Pa didn't get the Bible. Instead, he bundled up and went outside. I couldn't figure it out because we'd already done all the chores. I didn't worry about it long, though. I was too busy wallowing in self-pity. Soon, Pa came back in. It was a cold, clear night out, and there was ice in his beard. "Come on, Matt," he said. "Bundle up. Bundle up good. It's cold out tonight." I was really upset then. Not only wasn't I getting the rifle for Christmas, now Pa was dragging me out into the cold and for no earthly reason that I could see. We'd already done all the chores and I couldn't think of anything else that needed doing, especially not on a night like this. But I knew Pa was not very patient at one dragging one's feet when he'd told them to do something. So I got up and put my boots back on and got my cap, coat, and mittens. Ma gave me a mysterious smile as I opened the door to leave the house. Something was up. But I didn't know what. Outside, I became even more dismayed. There in front of the house was the work team, already hitched to the big sled. Whatever it was we were going to do wasn't going to be a short, quick little job, I could tell. We never hitched up the big sled unless we were going to haul a big load. Pa was already up on the seat, reins in hand. I reluctantly climbed up beside him. The cold was already biting at me. I wasn't happy. When I was on, Pa pulled the sled around the house and stopped in front of the woodshed. He got off and I followed. "I think we'll put on the high sideboards," he said. "Here, help me." The high sideboards? It had been a bigger job than I'd wanted to do with the low sideboards on. But whatever it was we were going to do would be a lot bigger with the high sideboards on. When we had exchanged the sideboards, Pa went into the woodshed and came out with an armload of wood. The wood I'd spent all summer hauling down from the mountain and then all fall sawing into blocks and splitting. What was he doing? Finally, I said something. "Pa," I asked, "what are you doing?" "You been by the Widow Jensen's lately?" he asked. The Widow Jensen lived about 2 miles down the road. Her husband had died a year or so before and left her with 3 children, the oldest being 8. "Sure, I'd been by, but so what?" "Yeah," I said, "why?" "I rode by just today," Pa said. "Little Jakey had been digging around in the wood pile trying to find a few chips. They're out of wood, Matt." That was all he said, and then he turned and went back into the woodshed for another armload of wood. I followed him. We loaded the sled so high that I began to wonder if the horses would be able to pull it. Finally, Pa called a halt to our loading. Then we went to the smokehouse, and Pa took down a big ham and a side of bacon. He handed them to me to put them in the sled and wait. When he returned, he was carrying a sack of flour over his right shoulder and a smaller sack of something in his left hand. "What's in the little sack?" I asked. "Shoes. They're out of shoes. Little Jakey just had gunny sacks wrapped around his feet when he was out in the woodpile this morning. I got the children a little candy too. It just wouldn't be Christmas without a little candy." We rode the 2 miles to Widow Jensen's pretty much in silence. I tried to think through what Pa was doing. We didn't have much by worldly standards. Of course, we did have a big wood pile, though most of what was left now was still in the form of logs that I would have to saw into blocks and split before we could use it. We also had meat and flour, so we could spare that, but I knew we didn't have any money. So why was Pa buying them shoes and candy? Really, why was he doing any of this? Widow Jensen had closer neighbors than us. It shouldn't have been our concern. We came in from the blind side of the Jensen house and unloaded the wood as quietly as possible. Then we took the meat and flour and shoes to the door. We knocked. The door opened a crack and a timid voice said, "Who is it?" "Lucas Miles, ma'am, and my son, Matt. Could we come in for a bit?" Widow Jensen opened the door and let us in. She had a blanket wrapped around her shoulders. The children were wrapped in another and were sitting in front of the fireplace by a very small fire that hardly gave off any heat at all. Widow Jensen fumbled with a match and finally lit the lamp. "We brought you a few things, ma'am," Pa said, and sat down the sack of flour. I put the meat on the table. Then Pa handed her the sack that had the shoes in it. She opened it hesitantly and took the shoes out one pair at a time. There was a pair for her and one for each of the children. Sturdy shoes, the best shoes that would last. I watched her carefully. She bit her lower lip to keep it from trembling, and then tears filled her eyes and started running down her cheeks. She looked up at Pa like she wanted to say something, but it wouldn't come out. "We brought a load of wood too, ma'am," Pa said. Then he turned to me and said, "Matt, go bring in enough to last for a while. Let's get that fire up to size and heat this place up." I wasn't the same person when I went back out to bring in the wood. I had a big lump in my throat, and much as I hate to admit it, there were tears in my eyes too. In my mind, I kept seeing those 3 kids huddled around the fireplace and their mother standing there with tears running down her cheeks and so much gratitude in her heart that she couldn't speak. My heart swelled within me and a joy filled my soul that I'd never known before. I had given at Christmas many times before, but never when it had made so much difference. I could see we were literally saving the lives of these people. I soon had the fire blazing and everyone's spirits soared. The kids started giggling when Pa handed them each a piece of candy, and Widow Jensen looked on with a smile that probably hadn't crossed her face for a long time. She finally turned to us. "God bless you," she said. "I know the Lord himself has sent you. The children and I have been praying that he would send one of his children to spare us. In spite of myself, the lump returned to my throat and the tears welled up in my eyes again. I had never thought of Pa in those exact terms before, but after Widow Jensen mentioned it, I could see that it was probably true. I was sure that a better man than Pa had never walked the earth, save one. I started remembering all the times he had gone out of his way for Ma and me and many others. The list seemed endless as I thought on it. Pa insisted that everyone try on the shoes before we left. I was amazed when they all fit, and I wondered how he had known what sizes to get. Then I guessed that if he was on an errand for the Lord, that the Lord would make sure he got the right sizes. Tears were running down Widow Jensen's face again when we stood up to leave. Pa took each of the kids in his big arms and gave them a hug. They clung to him and didn't want us to go. I could see that they missed their Pa, and I was glad that I still had mine. At the door, Pa turned to Widow Jensen and said, "The missus wanted me to invite you and the children over for Christmas dinner tomorrow. The turkey will be more than the three of us can eat, and a man can get cantankerous if he has to eat turkey for too many meals. We'll be by to get you about 11. It'll be nice to have some little ones around again. Matt here hasn't been little for quite a spell." I was the youngest. My two older brothers and two older sisters were all married and had moved away. Widow Jensen nodded and said, "Thank you, Brother Miles. I don't have to say. May the Lord bless you. I know for certain that he will." Out on the sled, I felt a warmth that came from deep within, and I didn't even notice the cold. When we had gone away, his Pa turned to me and said, "Matt, I want you to know something. Your Ma and me have been tucking a little money away here and there all year so we could buy that rifle for you. But we didn't have quite enough. Then yesterday, a man who owed me a little money from years back came by to make things square. Your Ma and me were real excited, thinking that now we could get you that rifle. And I started into town this morning to do just that. But on the way, I saw little Jakey out scratching in the woodpile with his feet wrapped in those gunny sacks, and I knew what I had to do. So, son, I spent the money for shoes and a little candy for those children. I hope you understand." I understood, and my eyes became wet with tears again. I understood very well, and I was so glad Pa had done it. Just then, the rifle seemed very low on my list of priorities. Pa had given me a lot more. He had given me the look on Widow Jensen's face and the radiant smiles of her three children. For the rest of my life, whenever I saw any of the Jensens or split a block of wood, I remembered, and remembering brought back that same joy I felt riding home beside Pa that night. Pa had given me much more than a rifle that night. He had given me the best Christmas of my life. I'm just going to say the end, and I'm really proud of myself that I didn't cry. I usually cry every time I read this story. So what are your nuggets, if you guys have any?
Well, I did you crying for you, because I've read that before, but boy, that is such a good story. It really is. And it's better to do something for someone that needs it than just to get ourselves another something that, you know, wouldn't have the value.
I think what stood out to me is how aware the father was. You know, he's on the road to do his own thing, and yet he noticed this little boy scratching for sticks. And he knew the family, who knew their story, and just how aware he was of this family and knowing what their needs were and being able to fulfill them. And I think my mind goes often to, I think we read these stories about physical needs, but people also have emotional and mental needs. Can we slow down? Can we stop? Can we become aware of other people's story and be able to help, not just physically, but emotionally, spiritually, mentally, all aspects of life?
The fact that it's not just the physical needs, right? Not just the shoes and the food. That's really what stood out to me, having come off of single parenting for 11 years and just looking back on that at this Christmas and realizing probably the greatest gifts that came through those years, you know, this woman as a widow, was the the other people that showed up, just the presence, the smile, the support that this father showed to the kids by giving them a hug and making the day for the kids in so many ways. That really struck me, that it was the relational component of it, and how much I imagine that filled up that widow's cup, just aside from all the physical necessities that were met in that moment.
Yeah, I feel you on that, Amy. I think that how it was done was very respectful and very loving. It wasn't just a handout. It was, you know, a couple of people in a family that not everybody understood what was going on, but it was like, okay, there are some pretty simple ways to support in a loving way, a joyful way, rather than, oh, here's a widow, poor thing, needs some help, go leave it on the door. They involved the whole family and thought about some of the little bright spots as well. So I thought that was great. And seeing the transformation of the son, who you learn later was the baby and probably, you know, had come along a little bit later when his parents were a little older and he had probably a lot given to him that he didn't really realize. But seeing his reflection and transformation through this was very cool.
Loved those thoughts, Krista. That was really beautiful. I think the thing that stood out the most to me, there were many principles that really spoke to my heart in that story, but the principle that really sticks out in my mind is actually one of kind of the component of like the family as like the center focal point of this story, right? Of this father and the son, and how that's demonstrated in multiple different ways, right? Like just the story involves you in like there's their daily chores, right? And the son already knew like what was expected, and he's like, something's different, like what's going on? And as they rode the 2 miles to somewhere, the son didn't even know, the father didn't say a word. And he was in his own head, just wondering like, where are we going? What are we doing? Like, what is my dad up to? Like, I have no idea what's going on. And that kind of just speaks to their relationship in and of itself, first of all. But then they get, I mean, like they're loading up their wagon with wood, and the son in his mind, right? He's like, this is the wood that I have chopped for months. I have put in the work. And yet this father saw this not as the sacrifice of his son, but like their family resources as the whole, because it was their whole family that was using that wood. Yeah, the son was the one that was had chopped the wood and had done the actual physical work, right? But it's a family unit, it's a family effort, and collectively, you know, they are stronger together, even with their resource of wood, right? And even the mom and the dad and how they had been tucking away money all year for a rifle for their son, because that's what they knew that he wanted. And I think that's probably, for me at least, it's probably one of the deeper principles that I'm seeing in this story that's really powerful, because I think it's because of the solid family unit that this father was that he could be so responsive to these people's needs. I was also really impressed with his humility in the story, right? Because he had been sacrificing all year for his son. Like, that's a valid sacrifice. And the son had been sacrificing his time and his effort to build up the wood pile, right? And like, and yet this father just so selflessly saw a need, and he was on this path and he turned and went this way, right? And he was like, we're going to buy shoes and we're going to add some extra good stuff and like candy, and we're going to take them wood, and then they're going to invite them over. And like the mom was involved in that decision, right? Like, come over tomorrow. We can't eat all the turkey. I don't know. And that's just what speaks to me in that story, is just the power of a family unit. And that's what I have.
I love that. Thank you all for everything that you guys have shared. This is, like I said, this is one of my favorite Christmas stories. And it fills my heart. Okay, so we are going to turn the time over to Jackie now. She's going to read our third and final story and wrap things up for the evening.
Okay, this next story, Amy, if you have the link, you're welcome to post it in the link in the chat. I mean, if you guys are interested in this story. So the story is really powerful. It's called The Cobbler and His Guest. And this takes place in France. I don't know when, but this is what the story says. So it says, long ago, there lived in the city of Marseille, an old shoemaker, loved and honored by all his neighbors, who affectionately called him Father Martin. One Christmas Eve, he sat alone in his little shop, reading of the visit of the wise men to the infant Jesus and of the gifts they brought. He said to himself, if tomorrow were the first Christmas, and if Jesus were to be born in Marseille this night, I know what I would give him. He arose and took from a shelf two little shoes of softest snow-white leather and bright silver buckles. I would give him these, my finest work. How pleased his mother would be. But I'm a foolish old man, he thought, smiling. The master has no need for my poor gifts. Replacing the shoes, he blew out the candle and retired to rest. Hardly had he closed his eyes, it seemed, when he heard a voice call his name, Martin. Intuitively, he felt aware of the identity of the speaker. Martin, you have longed to see me. Tomorrow I shall pass by your window. If you see me and bid me enter, I shall be your guest and sit at your table. He did not sleep that night for joy. Before it was yet dawn, he arose and tidied up his little shop. He spread fresh sand on the floor and wreathed green bows of fur along the rafters. On the table, he placed a loaf of white bread, a jar of honey, and a pitcher of milk. And over the fire, he hung a hot drink. His simple preparations were complete. When all was in readiness, he took up his vigil at the window. He was sure he would know the master. As he watched the driving sleet and rain in the cold, deserted street, he thought of the joy that would be his when he sat down and broke bread with his guest. Presently, he saw an old street sweeper pass by, blowing upon his thin, gnarled hands to warm them. Poor fellow, he must be half frozen, thought Martin. Opening the door, he called out to him, come in, my friend, and warm yourself and drink something hot. No further urging was needed, and the man gratefully accepted the invitation. An hour passed, and Martin next saw a poor, miserably clothed woman carrying a baby. She paused wearily to rest in the shelter of his doorway. Quickly, he flung open the door. Come in and warm while you rest, he said to her. You are not well? He asked. I am going to the hospital. I hope they will take me in and my baby, she explained. My husband is at sea and I am ill, without a soul to whom I can go. Poor child, cried the old man. You must eat something while you are getting warm. Let me give a cup of milk to this little one. Ah, what a bright, pretty little fellow he is. Why, you have no shoes on him. I have no shoes for him, sighed the mother. Then he shall have this lovely pair I finished yesterday. And Martin took down the soft little snow-white shoes he had looked at in the evening before and slipped them on the child's feet. They fit perfectly. And shortly the young mother went her way full of gratitude. And Martin went back to his post at the window. Hour after hour went by, and many needy souls shared the meager hospitality of the old cobbler, but the expected guest did not appear. At last, when night had fallen, Father Martin retired to his cot with a heavy heart. It was only a dream, he sighed. I did hope and believe, but he has not come. Suddenly, so it seemed to his weary eyes, the room was flooded with a glorious light, and to the cobbler's astonished vision there appeared before him, one by one, the poor street sweeper, the sick mother and her baby, and all the people whom he had aided during the day. Each one smiled at him and asked, "Have ye not seen me? Did I not sit at your table?" And then vanished. Then softly out of the silence, he heard again the gentle voice, repeating the old familiar words, "Whosoever shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. For I was anhungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me." The end.
I love this story, first of all, and my biggest takeaway, I think, always when I read this is it goes along with what we talked about in Amy's story, that observing, the power to observe, and this story, all three of them. He observed the needs of others, and he had his heart wide open, willing to share and serve. And I think that's a gift that I think it's a gift worth cultivating. So.
I think when we're open to it, there are miracles that happen everywhere, every day. And wasn't it Einstein that said, "You live as if nothing is a miracle or everything is a miracle." And for that matter, the synchronicity of him to have that little pair of white shoes that little boy needed, and he gave them to him. You know, that's so cool.
The fact that this man was reading and pondering struck me this time, like that he, I can get very busy and just kind of caught up in checking off to-do items, but he read and then asked, "If this were to happen this day in my city, what would I do?" Right? Like, I love that reflectiveness. And I imagine that, even though it wasn't written into the story, but that was a similar thing that he would do when those people entered his life. How can I contribute meaningfully to this person's life? You know? And it didn't have to be anything elaborate. It was what he had prepared for Christ. And he was able to offer the most basic of nourishing needs being met in that, in each of those moments.
I think what stood out to me at the beginning of the story, where he's like, "Oh, if Christ were to come, I'd give these little white shoes." And he almost felt like, what would Christ do with this? Like, he doesn't need this gift, right? And recently I've been reading this story of the woman that goes to Christ and washes his feet with oil and hair and her hair and just like gives her all to him, right? But sitting at that same table as a Pharisee that's judging her and saying, "Do you know who this is?" Right? But in that moment, Christ knows her heart and he knows the mind and thoughts of this Pharisee and approaches both of them with love and kindness. And I think is willing to accept whatever we can give. And I love that scripture that it says what we give to others, like we're giving to him. So I think oftentimes we're like, "Oh, I'm so inadequate. Like, I don't know what to give or how to give or what to do." But I think Christ simply says, "Give with your heart." That's it. I think we complicate things way more than we need to. I think Christ wants us to bring it back and just keep things simple and focus on the heart. And yeah, I love that story. And I'm grateful that other story came to mind, and just the simplicity of giving what we can is enough.
I've learned some really powerful things from all your guys' cool insights. I'll share mine in just a second, right? But Dolores, I loved your thinking, right, around, I call it divine synchronicity is what I call it, right? It's like those miracles or whatever you want to label it. It's like, I know there's got to be a power that is greater than me that is creating this amazing synchronicity that's like pulling all these cool things together, right? And I loved that insight, and I loved what you just shared, Janice, right? Around like keeping things simple, powerful concepts. I think the thing that really stood out to me from this story was kind of how he was right in the middle of the story, how he couldn't sleep all night, right? And he woke up with so much joy and so much anticipation. And it doesn't elaborate on this in the story, but I can just imagine him. I mean, it says he's this old man, right? But I can just imagine him like sitting at the window, like a puppy dog waiting for their human to come home, right? Like, is he coming yet? Right? Like, is he coming yet? And yet as he went to the window again and again and again, waited for his guest, he found other people, right? And like, that's a beautiful part of the story. And yet I'm leaning into that, like that joy and that space that he was holding all day of like just waiting. And maybe I think I got teared up at the end when it was the end of the day and he realized that he hadn't come. And that really spoke to me because I go to that space often where I'm joyfully going about and something, the result doesn't show up the way that I want it to. And that's a little bit crushing to my heart. And yet I loved in the story because it kind of bookends, like he heard a familiar voice at the beginning and he heard that same voice at the end that comforted him and met him where he was at and said, no, you did. Like, I was with you. When I'm in those spaces, like receiving those messages is very, very comforting to me, right? It's like it didn't all just fail in front of me. You know, things did work out. It's just different than what I, in my own being, just thought it was going to be. So that's what I learned from this story. So thank you everyone for coming tonight. We're just going to go ahead and wrap up, unless there's any other really big things that you want to share, or any other insights that any of you guys have about anything that we've talked about tonight, or any insights. I'll give you guys just a moment to check in and see if there's anything else that needs to be shared.
I would like to express my gratitude for having me here. This is my second time, and I really, really enjoy it. When I got home this evening, I got home about 6, and this started at 7 my time, and I was so tired, and I had to have a bite to eat and make my tea to come down, and I was on another meeting, Zoom, up until I had to leave it early. And this just feels good. And I'm just delighted to be here. And thank you so much. And Merry Christmas, everyone.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Dolores. It's very joyful for us to have you here. Since you came last time, I'm like, oh, that cute Dolores.
I really look forward to this. And when is the next one? Because I'll put it in my planner.
It will be. Are we doing the first Thursday, you guys, in January?
I have it written down.
Like, I forgot.
It is in January. Oh, I have it written down over here.
Two different.
Hold on. I think I wrote it down. January 6th. Yes.
That's what I thought.
January 6th.
Yep.
Okay.
Same time. So lovely. Yes, we are grateful to have each and every one of you guys here. And speaking of our next tea party, as lovely as, oh, and we have a special surprise for you guys that we will share. Heather, remind me to share that in just a minute. But so our next tea party, I'm really, really excited for. Not that I was not excited for this one, because this one was really lovely and nourishing to my heart, like they all are. But our next tea party is titled The Wilderness. And we are going to be focusing for the whole month of January on learning how to navigate our own wildernesses of our inner experiences. There's a lot that comes along with that, but it's a thing. But we will be focusing on learning some powerful things that can help us to align back with ourselves emotionally, mentally, spiritually, as we learn to navigate life and our journeys of coming back into a space of our hearts and love and wholeness and everything. Because there's a lot of things that pull us out of alignment with ourselves all the time. And that's part of navigating our wilderness. So there's a lot that we're going to unpack in that. And I'm really, really excited. In preparation for the theme for January, we know that learning how to honor and own our own stories is a really big part of that puzzle. And we're actually doing a free challenge in our Facebook group this upcoming week. So Monday through Thursday, it's a 4-day challenge. And I'm really excited. It's all about learning how to vulnerably and safely and bravely learn the principles around sharing our stories. And why that matters, because it matters for every one of us to learn how to own different parts of our story. Because there's as good, even if you're really good at sharing your story and you're like in this really good solid space with yourself, we all have little corners of our lives that are a little bit dark and a little bit cobwebby and that we don't look at. And those stories need to be brought to the surface so that they can get some fresh air and some light and some healing. And that is what we'll be focusing on this next week in our free challenge. So if you guys are interested in that, I would love to have you come participate. And beyond that, I'd love to invite you to invite other people that you know that just need some extra courage, that need to practice things in their lives to help them to find more peace and healing inside. Love to have you invite anybody that comes to mind. So I'm sharing the link to go and sign up for that. And all you need is just name and email address, super quick. And we'll send you the details for that challenge. I'm really excited for it. Even if you don't sign up, we're going to be doing all the videos and things in our Facebook group. So you'll be able to see those and the replays will be in there as well. It's going to be really powerful. It's going to be really powerful. So
when is that?
It starts next Monday.
Monday?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The 13th?
Yes, the 13th. The 13th.
Does this happen again?
No, it's actually going to be in the mornings. So 8 a.m. is when we'll be doing the training calls every day. And yeah.
Are you? I'll put that on the Facebook page.
Yep. Yep. That will be perfect. Cool. Okay. So there's that. And Heather created a really beautiful gift for us in conjunction with our tea party tonight. So I'll let her explain what her gift is and then we'll wrap things up.
Thank you, Jackie. I did. I actually posted it in our Facebook group on December 1st or 2nd. I can't remember now. I created, it was just heartfelt Christmas ideas. Our heart-centered Christmas ideas. It's a PDF you guys can print off for free. And it's just a list, almost like an advent calendar kind of thing, a list of things that you can choose to do, or maybe they'll spark ideas in you of things that you can do to help you really have a truly joyful heart-centered Christmas. So there you go.
We're so grateful for each one of you guys in attendance. We say this every time that we do a tea party, but we really couldn't do this without you guys being here. I guess we could. We could do it with ourselves, but it's just way more fun with other humans that we love dearly, dearly, dearly. But we are grateful for you guys, and we pray that your Christmas season and Christmas holidays will be full of light and love and goodness and, you know, charity and generosity, whether you're receiving or giving, and the joy that comes from living from those principles. So thank you.
Thank you so much, ladies.
You're welcome.
See you next time.
Eddie.
Thank you.
From our hearts to yours, thank you for joining us today on this episode of the Journey of Wholeness podcast. We are so grateful for you. We believe in you. If you'd love more of this great content, please consider subscribing. We'd love to support you even further by you joining our Facebook group community called The Journey of Wholeness, where we talk about principles to help empower and transform your life along your journey of wholeness. You can find out more details at thejourneyofwholeness.com.